Today is February 18, 2003, and we are opening up a public hearing on House Bill 2547. And first call Representative Betsy Close to the podium. And while she's coming up, for committee members' benefit as well as the audience, we have scheduled this two-hour hearing. We have equally divided the time allotted for this hearing so that it's going to be set up that the first 45 minutes will be presentations by the those who are proposing this legislation. The following hour will be occupied by those opposing it, and then wrap up with 15 minutes to the proponents once again. And for our committee members, I would at least suggest that time is tight. We only have the 2 hours allotted because the first committee follows right behind us. And as we are only in a public hearing piece, that ultimately if anything does go to work session, we see that happening with, at that time, opportunity for the, I think, the primary opponents and primary proponents to come back again to answer some questions if we need them answered. So my suggestion is that certainly if there is something that, that you absolutely need to have answered, you're welcome to ask those questions, but given the time schedule we're on today, that if you would rather hold those questions, that might be a little bit more helpful. And with that, Representative Close.
Thank you very much, Chair Doyle and members of the House Rules Committee. I am Betsy Close, State Representative in District 15. I sponsored this bill at the request of Oregon Right to Life. Much of the inspiration for the bill comes out of my own personal experience as well. When I graduated from college in 1972, I believed that women needed childbearing options. I was doing volunteer counseling for family planning at Thurston County Health Division in Olympia, Washington, when the United States Supreme Court legalized abortions on demand. Thus, I was involved in setting up some of the very first legal abortions. I first began to doubt that the abortion option was the best alternative when I would conduct post-interviews with women who recently had scheduled abortions. I could tell many of them were severely traumatized. As I researched pictures of the developing child, I began to see that the baby was a distinct human being with its own heart beating at 28 days after conception. I decided that there were good alternatives to having an abortion, and I ceased working for family planning. Later in the 1980s, my husband Chris and I worked with others in Corvallis for 7 years to set up the Corvallis Crisis Pregnancy Center, now the Pregnancy Care Center, to assist women who were in crisis pregnancy situations. We conducted pregnancy tests, educated women on how abortions are done and its aftermath and side effects, and assisted women who needed and wanted help in caring to term. Many of our clients had had one or two abortions previously and didn't want to go through it again. Largely, women felt that they had not understood fully what they were about to undergo, and many had regrets. I am bringing this legislation because I think women should be given the facts about the abortion procedure before they go into surgery, as with any other informed consent medical procedure. A woman should be told how the procedure is done, who the doctor will be, and the side effects. For example, I am attaching to the testimony an account from Phoenix, Arizona, May 5, 2001, of a woman who bled to death because of a perforated uterus during an abortion. And looking at this article, it was in our local paper, Albany Democrat Herald, the situation was that in Arizona, the law prohibited aborting a fetus after it becomes viable 22 to 26 weeks. In this case, the abortion was done after that point, but apparently the woman did not know that that was the law. Anyway, she ended up bleeding to death. The doctor was charged with negligent homicide, and the pregnancy was actually too advanced to be terminated in the view of that court. So I'm bringing that to show you that this does happen. It does happen today, and it is something that frightens me, that women are getting into situations, especially women who are young, minors, and because there's no parental notification in our state, they don't have their parents to help them make that decision many times, and so they need to at least have the information themselves so they can make an informed choice. and know that there are dangers to the procedure. House Bill 2547 will require a physician to tell a patient 24 hours before an abortion the facts about her child, the medical risks involved in abortion and pregnancy. She will be given information about laws regarding child support. 15 other states have similar laws which have been held constitutionally in Planned Parenthood versus Casey, 1992. Provisions are in the bill to cover emergency life-threatening situations. And I urge the members of the committee to consider this as a crucial women's health issue. I ask you to equip women with the information they need to make an informed choice when deciding about the future of their unborn child and their own health. Let us move to protect our Oregon women in this very vulnerable situation. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions? Okay. Thank you, Representative. I'll call the podium Lisa Heacock and Lori Eckstein. Thanks for coming today, and Lisa, if we can start with you and first introduce yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Okay. Chairman Doyle and members of the committee, thank you for your time. My name is Lisa Heacock from Portland, Oregon. I feel the need to share a little bit about myself. When I was 18, a senior in high school, I found myself facing an unplanned pregnancy. I was shocked, scared, confused, and alone. Instead of taking time to recover from my shock, I rushed into what would be the worst decision of my life. I chose abortion. I was told by the counselor that I was doing the right thing and that I had so much to live for and so much still to do with my life. I asked her about the physical pain, and she stated that it was a lot less painful than childbirth. I had never given birth before, so I had nothing to gauge that by, but it sounded like it wouldn't be too painful. I have given birth twice since then, and it's a cakewalk compared to the physical and emotional pain of an abortion. As the doctor was performing my abortion, I remember looking at the face of the woman who told me this as she stood there in the room seemingly so concerned for me. I remember thinking, "You lied to me. Why did you do that? What's in it for you? This is the most excruciating pain." After my abortion, my life bottomed out. I broke up with my boyfriend. I was so resentful and angry with him that I could no longer be with him. This relationship that I had tried to hold on to and even sacrificed my child for was gone, and so was my baby. I was left with an empty hole in my heart, and to mask the pain, I began drinking and partying and became very promiscuous. All of these behaviors were shocking to me as well as my close friends. I had told only two friends of my abortion. I was so ridden with guilt and shame that I could no longer or could not share with anyone what I had done. What would people think of me? Abortion may be legal, but it is still socially unacceptable. You do not hear women shouting from the rooftops that they just had an abortion. I struggled with anger, depression, guilt, shame, fear, and so much more. I found myself sleeping all the time. I couldn't eat. When the depression became too much, I figured I had only two choices, either to change my life or to end my life. And I am so grateful that I decided to change my life. 5 years after my abortion, I married and had two children. After counseling and much healing from my past abortion, my marriage, my relationship, and my life was forever changed for the better. I realized that the pro-abortion groups would say that post-abortion stress is not real, but I can attest that it is. Where are they when the denial breaks and the women's lives are destroyed, their heart is crushed, and the pain is too much to bear? Where are the abortionists, the counselors, and the clinic workers? I am now the director of a post-abortion support program, and I have talked to hundreds of women who struggle with post-abortion stress. I have talked with and counseled women who have told me their story in which they were pregnant and the abortion clinic performed an ultrasound on them to determine how far along they were and what the procedure would be and what they would use to abort their baby. During the ultrasound, the technician turned the monitor away from the patient so they would not see their baby on the screen. One client has shared her story in which she was raped and became pregnant. She felt she had to hide her rape and her pregnancy, so she chose abortion. During her ultrasound, the technician did just that. By turning the monitor away from her, she stated years later that had she seen the truth of how formed her baby was, how the heart was beating, the child had everything present that a grown adult had, she would have never ended her baby's life. She states in her testimony that her abortion was worse than the rape itself, which the pro-abortion groups would say otherwise. She is only one of the many I talk with. You may think that with the technology of ultrasound machines and the pictures inside the womb, that these women and girls know the information about their unborn baby before they choose abortion. Many do not. And these are very educated, intelligent women and girls, but they are not aware of the life that is growing inside of them. Physicians have an obligation to give these women all the facts they deserve to know before they make this potentially life-changing decision. The choice is ultimately theirs, and no one should use coercion or deceit, not even the abortion clinics. But they deserve to know all the facts and make an educated, informed decision and give them all their choices. Thanks.
Thank you. Lori.
My name is Lori Eckstein. I'm from Cottage Grove, and I am here, of course, to speak in support of HB 2547. In my volunteer work at a pregnancy resource center offering service in Eugene for the past 30 years, I encounter women seeking a pregnancy test. These young women are often U of O students or high school students. The U of O students express pride in their knowledge and their status as a student, yet these same women are astounded at the pictures of fetal development they view in our center. One woman proudly told me she had read some pre-med books and knew enough to make an informed choice. When shown the pictures and given medical facts, her whole demeanor changed in astonishment. Another young woman worked in the U of O bookstore and felt confident in her level of knowledge. Again, there was amazement when she learned how developed her baby was. She repeatedly told me how glad she was that there was a place like this for her to come to. We hear that often. We also hear surprise that our center is in existence and are asked how long we've been around. We hear girls and women lament how they wished they knew we were here when they were pregnant before, indicating their choice may have been different had they known facts and had support. Most women regret hastily made abortion decisions, often made when still in the crisis mode and being pressured to abort by her partner, peers, or circumstances. It is respecting and protecting these girls and young women to allow them a 24-hour time period to reflect and to make an informed decision of their own volition. HB 2547 would ensure that women get the opportunity they need to make the choice that best serves their needs, thus empowering them to make real choices. The high school age girls who seek our services are usually accompanied by a friend. They are typical teens with the appropriate maturity level. They are often in a state of emotional turmoil, fearful and anxious, looking for the quick fix of abortion as is portrayed in schools and in the media. They are informed about contraception choices, but I've never seen one yet that knew about fetal development, about all of the resources for pregnancy support, and had knowledge of abortion's risks. This last year, we experienced a pregnant 16-year-old who was brought to the center by her older sister. The older sister, who admitted she herself had an abortion, forbade us to do any counseling or disseminating of information. Soon after, she forced her younger sister to have an abortion. The young girl has since called the center and also has returned, telling what the abortion did to her, how she has self-hatred, suicidal thoughts, and had made suicide attempts. She and all young girls could be helped greatly and spared this victimization and its resulting trauma if they were provided the information required in HB 2547 and protected by the 24-hour waiting period. They would truly be served by being offered a list of assistance services who will help them work through their emotions and fears during this stressful time, giving them clarity to reconsider their circumstances and given time to get the support they need and to follow through with their decisions. In my line of work, I work with women who have been impacted by abortion, like the 16-year-old. They suffer from a variety of symptoms, including depression, intense grief, anger, bitterness, emotional numbness, isolation, alcohol and drug abuse, eating disorders, sexual dysfunction, repeat abortions, self-punishment, abusive relationships, suicide ideation and attempts, sleep disorders, personality disorders, sterility, and miscarriages. When they come to me, they are seeking healing and resolution for their abortions, some done over 30 years ago and some done within the current year. None of the women were given information on the possible physical and emotional effects they could experience from their abortions. Almost none of them knew that their baby was not simply a blob of tissue, a clump of cells, or a product of conception. It was predominantly a choice made in ignorance and or under coercion, both overt and subtle, to not keep the pregnancy. Two of those women have given me permission to share their story of how their abortion choice was devoid of information. Connie's abortion occurred in Medford. She says, "When I was 16, I began dating a person regularly, and after a couple of months of dating, I got pregnant. It never occurred to me to keep the baby and put the baby up for adoption. It was just too easy to get an abortion and be done with it. My boyfriend drove me to the abortion clinic. I went inside while he waited out in the car. I remember sitting down with the abortionist, and he asked me a few questions. I think he called it a counseling session, though he never told me that what he was going to do to me was going to change the rest of my life forever. I went through with the abortion and remember asking the nurse if they could tell if it was a boy or a girl. She quickly replied, 'Oh no, it's way too early to tell that. That is the baby I named Christopher.' After my first abortion, my behaviors became self-destructing. I was drinking, doing drugs, becoming promiscuous, and began having anxiety attacks. When I was 21, I got pregnant again. I asked my friend to take me to the abortion clinic, and there I had my second abortion. This is the baby I have now named Teresa. After that abortion, my anxiety attacks reached almost paralyzing heights. So to try to deal with the panic attacks and the pain, I began drinking even heavier, which in turn gave me more anxiety attacks." Susan's abortion occurred in Corvallis, and she says, "When the nurse stated that the test was positive, she started to set up a prenatal appointment, and I said, 'No, I am not keeping the pregnancy.' An appointment was made, and I went to the Corvallis clinic by myself. At no time did anyone talk to me. The doctor came in, the nurse did hold my hand, and then it was over. No one said, 'How are you?' or 'What was going on? Are you sure this is what you want?'" And now for my personal story. "When I was 16 years old, I had an abortion in a hospital clinic in Eugene. Upon the knowledge of my pregnancy, my parents had asked me if I wanted a baby. My thought of a baby was that of a newborn baby cradled in my arm. I didn't think or know that I already had a living baby in my womb. I answered my parents with a no. My mother took me to Dr. Will, an OBGYN in Eugene. At no time did he offer me, or us, information about the age of the baby or fetal development. Although he talked to my mom while we were all in the room together, I do not remember him speaking to me. I believe that my mom was also ignorant of the development of the baby and had no idea of the physical and emotional consequences an abortion would have on me, since we were not given any of that information or counseling by the doctor. I did not make a free choice for abortion. Without knowledge, I did not have the power to make a choice. Instead, I was subtly pressured by shame and pressured to protect my father's public reputation. After the abortion, I suffered with increasing shame, low self-esteem, recurring depression at the time of year of the abortion, and an inability to forgive myself. For many years, I was able to repress most of my memories of the abortion episode. It wasn't until about 10 years afterwards, when I viewed a pamphlet of an aborted child, that I was struck and horrified with the facts and realization of what I had done. I was offered a lie that abortion was a quick, easy fix, a way to undo something I had done. If I had been given all the information I needed and been given time to consider it, as well as for my parents to do the same, I do not believe I would be here, a woman and her family, wounded by an abortion 32 years ago." Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Esther Rifflinger and Debbie Wyatt. Thank you for coming today. Esther, we'll start with you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Doyle and members of the committee. I was 19. I was pregnant and scared.
Esther, if I can just stop you a quick minute. Just need to introduce yourself for the record, please.
Sorry, Esther Rifflinger. I'm from Almsville in Oregon. I was 19. I was pregnant and scared. My boyfriend and his family told me to get an abortion. I feared the alternative, which was to be a mother all alone. At the clinic, I hoped they would give compassionate advice. I told her we had plans on paper to be married, but his parents insisted on the abortion. "These kinds of relationships don't work out at your age," she said discouragingly. I was not made aware of the many community services available for pregnant women. Rather, she proceeded to sell me the abortion as a quick and painless routine procedure. I asked the woman about the baby's stage of development. "It's only a blob of tissue," she said. "The truth is that my baby already had hands, feet, and a beating heart." She proceeded to explain the procedure. She showed me a model to demonstrate the laminaria, which was to be inserted. Beyond this point, she emphasized, "You must not change your mind." As I was leaving the room to go to the waiting area, I remembered they had given me a pregnancy test, but she had not told me the result, and so I asked her about the result of the pregnancy test. She said in reply, "It is positive." Upon entry of the waiting room, they gave me Valium. I wished for a way out even then, but the medicine caused me to not worry about anything. After this laminaria procedure, I thought it was too late to change my mind because of what they had told me, what she had told me. While on the table, a man entered. Though he would perform the abortion, I had not seen him or spoken to him before that moment. Both the sound of the machine and the pain were shocking to me. I was not informed of this excruciating pain. In fact, the woman told me I would feel minor discomfort. There I was, gripping for my life, feeling the sting of death in the most tender part of my body as my baby was sucked out of me with a vacuum device. For a brief moment, I recuperated on a cot. They needed a place to rest another girl. Even though hardly ready to leave, a woman came to show me out the back fire door. Gingerly, I walked out. This was not the door I entered into the waiting room. Surely someone coming in the front door would be disturbed if they would see how I looked afterwards. I lived in denial for many years and did not realize to what extent the abortion had affected me. I experienced periods of depression, especially during a certain part of the year for which I was prescribed an antidepressant. Years later, I realized my depression was the anniversary of the abortion. The truth is, my body had not forgotten this trauma that I had tried to forget. I experienced extreme anxiety over the vacuum cleaner, which I later realized was because it reminded me of the suction from the abortion. I also became overly protective of my young son and feared he might die. I have lived with the consequences of my choice. I have found it to be the worst decision I have ever made. The pain and incredible loss of a child lasts a lifetime. I support House Bill 2547 because it would allow other women to have the information that I did not have. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Deborah Lee Wyant. I reside in Salem, Oregon, and as spokesperson for Silent No More, I'll be speaking in support of HB 2547. Chairman Doyle, members of the committee, thank you for inviting us here today to share our testimony and the effects that it's had on our life and those around us. I was a teenager at the time, barely 18 years old, just a couple weeks in. I didn't want to know anything. I just wanted the problem to go away. Like many others, I was told you don't want to embarrass your family. A fetus is only tissue, not a child. It's a simple, easy procedure. And then in my case, the health worker leans forward and with a kind, gentle voice says, "And no one needs to know." At that time, a veil of shame just dropped on the situation. At this moment in my life, I was embracing deception and I was deceiving myself. The moment of the abortion is not the beginning of the problem, nor is it the end. The problem began long before, during the child's life, through abuse, being taught to be a pleaser with false obedience, unavailable fathers. None of these issues are addressed by the abortion. They all continue. Yet now there's an added veil of shame as they tell you, you don't want to embarrass your family, and no one needs to know. Layer upon layer is added year upon year. I, like many other post-abortive women, experienced promiscuousness, being unable to commit to a relationship even after marriage. Alcohol and drug use. There's high numbers of women living on Prozac, Xanax, and drugs of that sort. Severe depression. Not just sadness, but extreme anger that is manifest in the home. Suicidal feelings. Feeling disgraced and disqualified. On the other side, I was striving to be perfect in all areas of life, being supermom, making sure I looked good on the outside because of feeling so unclean on the inside. and silently mourning this lost child, especially on that day every year that should have been celebrated as a birthday. And so we live a secret life, hoping no one can see we're really no longer the same, believing if they only knew who I really am, no one would like me. These symptoms profoundly affect our lives, both the life of the woman and those of her family. Trying to treat the symptoms without looking for the underlying cause is like trying to clip off the leaves of a dandelion and being surprised when it grows back stronger than ever. For many of us, it is years before we will face the truth of our choice, that we aborted a precious life. But I'm here to say, every woman will know the truth of her abortion at some point in her life. You see, acknowledging that you've had an abortion and facing the truth of your regret and how you have tried to fix it in your life, whether through relational problems, substance abuse, whatever, those two are very different things. My moment of truth came when my husband was in the middle of the most important season of his life, at a time when his wife and family should have been his strongest supporters. He was in the middle of a political campaign running for an Oregon State Senate seat. I'm sure you can all relate to understanding exactly how devastating it was for him to have his wife go from supermom and strong supporter to zero in less than 2 weeks, those 2 weeks being in September, right before the general election. I had told my husband about the abortion long before we were married. I remember being so afraid that he would end the relationship. He responded with kind words, "Oh, that was before we met. You're a different person. Let's just leave it in the past. Don't tell anyone else." You see, his response was exactly the same as the woman who had talked to me about having the abortion. "You don't want to embarrass your family, and no one needs to know." Not knowing how to work this out, there were now two of us living with secret shame. What brought me to a screeching halt during the last weeks of the campaign was that I felt I could no longer hide this secret and the symptoms that manifested from not dealing with it. As you know, political campaigns bring most everything to the surface. While I could have gone on in my regular manner for several more years, everything came apart because I lived with the terrible fear, if they only knew. I'm thankful to say my husband chose to work on healing for our family and let the election go. My purpose in sharing is not to look at the past and dig up dross. It's not to point a finger and blame. I fully admit to wanting to be deceived at that point in my life. I don't believe that those who advised me had any evil intent in doing it the way they did. They just focused on my distress and wanted to make things better. But what I was told, that it was a simple, easy procedure, turned out to be far from the truth. I was far enough along in my pregnancy that the procedure needed was a saline abortion. While in the hospital, the nurse told me when I felt like I was going to deliver, I was to go over to this little stool with a container under it and expel the fetus. She specifically told me not to look in the container. Well, this was after the procedure, and no one had ever said anything about this. Everything went wrong that could have gone wrong. My body just did not want to terminate this pregnancy. I was in the hospital 5 days before they gave me a general anesthetic to extract the baby. I spent another couple days in the hospital being watched, though no one said what for, and then I was just sent home to go on with life. No information about struggling, emotionally or physically. In my ignorance, I thought up all kinds of scenarios, all kinds of lies. As women come forward to join the ranks of Silent No More, they tell stories of coercion, nightmares from sounds and sights they remember. Many are so paralyzed by fear that someone may find out they are unable to function as the loving wife, mother, sister, friend they want to be. And one underlying fact that is true in almost every case is that they were not given full disclosure of the procedure or its effects, nor were they advised of the alternatives of carrying their pregnancy to term, adoption, or other help in their community. Many are living lives of regret, striving to keep the outer appearance of their lives intact so that their secret is safe, yet knowing it's only a matter of time before they are so exhausted it will all fall apart. We have seen that secret shame is extremely damaging to all our lives, hurting families generation after generation. What is being asked for in HB 2547, informed choice, is just that we be totally informed before we make the choice. thoroughly going through all aspects of the procedure and its effects, the after effects, and all possible alternatives available. There is a huge difference between an emotional choice and an educated choice, and there are far fewer regrets when we operate from a position of complete knowledge. We've heard it said, abortion will fix the problem. The truth is, abortion, as it is now being administered, creates a much larger problem. I now know that in any other situation, if I were seeking medical guidance or surgical procedure, and the healthcare personnel lean close to tell me, no one needs to know, it would set off immediate warning signals, and at the very least, I should be looking for a second opinion. Thank you for the opportunity to testify before you today.
Any questions? Thank you. Okay, Gail Atterbury.
Good afternoon, Chairman Doyle and members of the committee. My name is Gail Atterbury. I'm the director of Oregon Right to Life. I'm just here for a short moment to talk a little bit more about the bill and how it works. You have a synopsis in there of the bill, and it's pretty well explained. However, I just want to make a couple points very clear. In the bill, it's required that a pamphlet be provided that would describe the unborn child in many different stages of development, and also that a website would be provided by the state of Oregon that would do the same. The information that this pamphlet is available and the website is available must be offered to the woman, but the woman does not have to accept it. And I think that's very important. She can refuse it and say, no, I don't want that information. But it must be told to her that it's available. That, and along with information of alternatives that are available in the community to help her carry to term if she would like to do that. The bill that you have before you is based almost word for word on a law passed by Pennsylvania legislators and upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court in 1992 in a case called Planned Parenthood versus Casey. This, like I said, this bill is almost word for word out of that Pennsylvania law. And I'd like to read you a couple excerpts from Sandra Day O'Connor as she upheld the bill. And you have that also in your handout, and I've highlighted them to make it easier for you to find out where I am. And this is her majority opinion, what she said about the right of states to pass legislation such as this. And she says, to promote the state's profound interest in potential life throughout pregnancy, the state may take measures to ensure that the woman's choice is informed. Skipping down, in attempting to ensure that a woman apprehend the full consequences of her decision, the state furthers the legitimate purpose of reducing a risk that a woman may elect an abortion only to discover later with devastating psychological consequences that her decision was not fully informed. And I think that's what you've heard before you today, ladies and gentlemen, is that the psychological consequences that women live with, that they had no idea were ahead of them when they made their choice, which was not fully informed. And then continuing down, in short, requiring that a woman be informed of the availability of information relating to fetal development and the assistance available should she decide to carry the pregnancy to full term is a reasonable measure to ensure an informed choice, one which might cause the woman to choose childbirth over abortion. So actually they're even kind of saying that it's might be helpful for a woman to choose childbirth over abortion, and certainly the women that you've heard from today would reflect that. And then in speaking to the 24-hour waiting period, which is in this bill, the court said, the idea that important decisions will be more informed and deliberate if they follow some period of reflection does not strike us as unreasonable, particularly where the statute directs that important information become part of the background of the decision. The statute permits avoidance of the waiting period in the event of medical emergency, and that's what this bill does also. I'd like to point out that 15 states have enacted legislation just like this. Many of them have had this legislation operating for 8 to 10 years. States are beginning to adopt this. Even now, as you debate, there are other legislative bodies debating this also. Let's see. There's anything more I wanted to cover and make sure. You may hear today, in fact, you probably will hear today, that the state already has informed consent in ORS 677, and that is true. However, I believe that in the many, many, many cases, and we've heard of some of them today, that the informed consent, as it is required to be operative and is operative in any other surgical procedure, is not operative in the abortion decision. And that I think you've already heard that from some testifiers today. So I would urge you to support HB 2547.
Thank you.
Now, there's a little time left in this segment, and I'm wondering, Chairman Doyle, if that could be... There's two more testifiers, and if we break it up, if we did it now, could I have 7 minutes to the 15? and have the two do that together?
Well, it shouldn't be a problem. I mean, it's just a matter of, you know, we're going to...
It'd still be the hour. It's just a little teeny different configuration.
That would work fine.
Is that all right?
Okay. So that's all you have? Any questions?
Oh, I do have another one. I'm sorry.
Sure.
I'm sorry. I did send one chart with you. Proponents of abortion do say that they would like abortion to be safe, legal, and rare. And if this is true, we should all appreciate this bill, because I do have a chart there that we have looked at some other states that have pro-life laws on the books, and we can see that the abortion numbers and rates have decreased in those states in comparison to Oregon, where our rates and our numbers have not decreased. Now, thank you.
Okay, so looks like about 6 minutes short there, what I'm going to do is pass the gavel over to our vice chair, Moss Anderson, and would appreciate that the testimony be addressed to our vice chair and to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have here Linda Bryant, Julie Powers, and Ellen Lowe.
And Chairman, member of committee, thank you for the opportunity to testify today. I'm Linda Bryant. I'm the Assistant Medical Director of Planned Parenthood of the Columbia Willamette. I have been a women's health care nurse practitioner at Planned Parenthood for close to 8 years and have provided health care services for as many as 3,600 patients per year. Under Oregon Statute 677, the provider of medical services is required by law to obtain the informed consent of the patient by explaining medical treatments, alternative procedures or treatments, and any risk associated with medical treatment. HB 2547 is totally unnecessary and only serves to undermine the provider-patient relationship and potentially jeopardizes the well-being of the woman seeking access to medical services. As part of any examination, education is provided to the patient. In my experience, I have found that most women want to increase their awareness and understanding of their anatomy and physiology. Each patient that comes for a pregnancy test or schedule an appointment for an abortion is provided with options about continuing the pregnancy, facts regarding medical and surgical abortion, and continuing the pregnancy to term. risk factors, referral to local providers for prenatal care, adoption, and other abortion providers. General information about insurance coverage and availability of extended counseling or psychological consultation, which may be requested or deemed medically advisable. Attached to my testimony today is Planned Parenthood Federation of America's Manual of Medical Standards and Guidelines. These are the guidelines that our clinicians use to provide pregnancy testing, evaluation, and option counseling services, and informed consent requirements for both options counseling and abortion services. Forcing a woman to wait 24 hours and imposing biased counseling after she has made the decision to have an abortion not only interferes with the provider-patient relationship, it undermines the ability of a woman to make her own health care decisions. In my experience, by the time a woman calls for an appointment, she is already agonized over the decision to terminate her pregnancy. Since abortion services are only provided by appointment, a woman has additional time to consider what is best for her. Most clinics only provide services on certain days, so the notion that a woman walks in off the street seeking an abortion is simply not how our health centers work. The patient-provider relationship creates a safe and trusting arena where information can be provided that empowers the patient to make informed decisions based on this medically accurate information. A woman should work with her provider to address her personal and legal right to plan her family without interference of the state. By imposing biased state-mandated counseling on a woman seeking abortion services, the government is interfering with my ability to provide the highest quality, professional, and unbiased medical care for my patients. I urge you to oppose House Bill 2547. And thank you for the opportunity to share my testimony.
Questions? Representative Close.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Bryant, in Section 1, Subsection 2 of the bill, it defines health care provider. That means a person licensed or certified to provide health care under ORS Chapter 677 or 678. These are the people who would be providing the information. You've said in your testimony that that's biased counseling. Can you explain why a health care provider would be biased counseling?
Well, a health care provider would not provide biased counseling. I think the state-mandated counseling, as described in this bill, is inaccurate medical information. To tell you a little bit about Planned Parenthood, we have a national medical committee. It's made up of expert physicians from around the country who meet several times a year. And all of our standard and guidelines that we practice under are based under the best and most accurate medical information.
Ms. Bryant, I noticed that it said attached to the testimony is the Planned Parenthood Federation of America's Manual of Medical Standards and Guidelines, and they weren't attached. Would it be possible to get those?
Right.
We'll have copies. Thank you. One other question I have there been any lawsuits regarding from patients who have not been given informed consents? I mean, has that ever happened?
Not with our agency, no.
Thank you. If there's no further questions, we'll go ahead with Julie Powers.
Mm-hmm. My name is Julie Powers, and I'm a nurse practitioner, and I'm Director of Quality Management at Planned Parenthood of the Columbia Willamette. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I appreciate the opportunity to testify today. Planned Parenthood of the Columbia Willamette provides affordable reproductive health care for more than 36,000 women and men in Oregon each year. In our six clinics, we provide birth control, screening for cervical cancer and sexually transmitted infections, pregnancy tests, and abortion services. Planned Parenthood opposes HB 2547. The bill is unnecessary because ORS 677 already requires providers to obtain the informed consent of a patient before doing a medical procedure. The law is quite clear in this regard. Providers must explain the medical procedure, the risks and alternatives of that procedure, and answer patient questions about the procedure. Further, there is no credible evidence that women are dissatisfied with the counseling and consent process they undergo when obtaining abortion care. To the contrary, women are overwhelmingly satisfied with the care they receive and the physicians who provide it. In 1999, Kaiser Family Foundation study done in conjunction with the Picker Institute of the Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center found that with regards to abortion, 60% of women rated overall care as excellent, and another third, 38%, said care was very good or good, and 96% said they would recommend their provider to a friend or family member. HB 2547 interferes with the provider-patient relationship because it requires a state-mandated lecture that medical providers would be forced to give to patients, a lecture designed specifically to scare and intimidate women with biased information. It interferes with the best medical judgment of providers based on the individual circumstances of a patient. HB 2547 requires that providers deal with all women in the same manner, even if their pregnancy is a result of rape or an unwanted pregnancy for which a serious medical complication has arisen. HB 2547 would force medical providers to violate their code of professional ethics. Counseling and consent should be provided in a neutral, non-directional, medically accurate manner. Healthcare providers should not be in a situation of having to provide what amounts to biased counseling to try to dissuade a patient from having an abortion. Planned Parenthood is committed to helping each patient come to her own decision about how to handle an unplanned pregnancy. We have been providing options counseling for as long as we have been doing pregnancy tests. Each patient receives a confidential counseling session where she is given a brochure that outlines considerations for all three options, parenting, adoption, and abortion. We also provide multiple referrals for prenatal care, adoption, and abortion services. Planned Parenthood always asks the woman if she has been pressured or coerced in any way to make a decision she is not comfortable with, while emphasizing the importance of reaching a decision that is appropriate for her and one with which she is completely comfortable. And in the vast majority of cases, we find that women have thought about decisions for several days or more before her counseling session. Any woman who appears to be conflicted or unsure is always counseled to wait until she is 100% sure about her decision before moving forward. HB 2547 is not about improving women's health care, as the proponents misleadingly assert. Currently, there are no laws in Oregon that single out and place special requirements on an individual medical procedure, nor should there be. HB 2547 is designed to guide a woman away from existing, exercising her rights to choose safe, legal abortion. Thank you very much for allowing me to testify today.
Thank you, Ms. Powers. Any questions? Representative Close.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Powers, you have said that House Bill 2547 will force healthcare providers to violate their professional code of ethics. Could I ask you, suppose I'm diagnosed with appendicitis, and I ask the doctor who's going to do the surgery to sit down with me, and I ask him how it's going to be done, and I ask him what side effects I might experience, and I ask him if there's an alternative to having that surgery, would that be asking him to violate his code of professional ethics?
Not that I can see.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Thank you. Ellen Lowe.
Vice Chair Mona Sanderson, Chair Doyle, and members of the House Rules and Public Affairs Committee. I'm Ellen Lowe, legislative advocate for the Oregon Law Center. We provide free civil legal services to low-income individuals statewide. The Law Center assists clients with such diverse problems as housing, consumer concerns, taxes, health services, public benefits, domestic relations, educational concerns, and farm worker problems. Accordingly, on behalf of its clients, the Law Center is very concerned about barriers to the availability and quality of health services for low-income women. House Bill 2547 will create hardships for many low-income women seeking a legal medical procedure. Abortion services are not available in every sector of Oregon. Women often have to travel a considerable distance to access the service. For low-income women, this means taking time off from work and probably arranging for child care for their children. The 24-hour waiting period would be a financial hardship, and because of being away from family and friends, an emotional one as well. It's not a time to add burdens. House Bill 2547 appears to have delay for its goal, rather than a supportive climate for the pregnant woman. A telephone conversation or one by mail from the healthcare provider with a prescribed script is certainly not focused on the very individual, personal needs of the patient. 2547 also places a considerable reporting and documentation requirement on the physicians providing abortion services. The likely consequence, probably not unintended, may be to discourage physicians from performing the medical procedure. House Bill 2547 should not be the vehicle, but there are many other legislative concepts, substantive and fiscal, that have the potential to provide real support for women seeking the freedom to make reproductive choices. These social supports include some of the include the following, and I've given you quite a list. And I'd just like to call special attention to those dealing with health care, with child care, and one that certainly is on the minds of many now, and that's honoring the Staley Agreement so that medically fragile children will receive services. The list could be so much longer. We do have so many opportunities to develop supportive policies for families. We should be about expanding choices, not limiting them for Oregon women. And I thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lowe. Are there any questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Richard Allen, Dr. Grant Higginson, and Scott Gallant. And Dr. Scott Gallant.
Is Grant here?
Okay. Go ahead, Dr. Allen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Madam Chair, and members of the committee for having me here to speak to you today, and I am providing you with copies of my testimony. My name is Dr. Richard Allen. I'm a past president of the Oregon Medical Association and a board-certified and recertified obstetrician-gynecologist. I'm currently a clinical professor of obstetrics and gynecology at Oregon Health Sciences University. And I'm currently serving as the delegate from ACOG to the American Medical Association. And I'm here really speaking on behalf of the Oregon section of the ACOG, American College of Obstetrician Gynecologists. I'm here today to express my strong opposition to House Bill 2547. Although this is called an informed consent bill, it's nothing but a thinly veiled attempt to frighten and coerce women away from exercising their constitutional right to choose. I might parenthetically add that any self-respecting physician would be foolish not to have an informed consent conference with their patient. It's what we call a PAR conference. P stands for procedure, A is the alternatives, R is the risks. So in discussing any type of procedure, medical or surgical, the physician is certainly behooved to discuss those options with the patient and to document that in their chart. Forcing a woman to wait 24 hours after she's made a decision to have an abortion reflects the demeaning assumption that women are unable to make responsible decisions without governmental interference. All aspects of medicine, not only the Oregon Medical Association, but the AMA, has strongly opposed governmental interference in the practice of medicine and intervening in the doctor-patient relationship. Mandatory delay periods may have dangerous health implications for women because these periods often lead to services being postponed for much longer and then become a much more risky procedure. In Oregon, 78% of counties do not even have an abortion provider. The American Medical Association has concluded that delay periods increase the gestational age at which an induced pregnancy termination occurs, thereby also increasing the risk associated with the procedure. And I've cited an article in JAM on the journal of the AMA from that. As a physician at Oregon Health Sciences University, I believe medical decisions should remain between the doctor and his or her patient, not the government. This bill interferes with the relationship between a woman, her family, and her doctor by requiring physicians to give their patients inaccurate medical information designed to coerce women into continuing an unwanted pregnancy. Oregon state law already requires doctors to, quote, explain medical treatments, alternative procedures or treatments, and any risks associated with medical treatments, end quote. That's the PAR conference I was referring to. In the same manner as of any other medical procedure or treatment. Thus, by counseling patients with biased information supplied by a state agency, House Bill 2547, in effect, would inhibit doctors from exercising their own professional, ethical, moral, or medical judgment. HB 2547 also further politicizes this already difficult and divisive issue. Legislators should work to prevent unintended pregnancies by increasing access to contraception rather than targeting women and complicating the lives of those who are seeking a safe and legal medical procedure. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Dr. Higginson? Oh, any questions first? Yes. Representative Close.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Allen, you have said that this bill would interfere with the relationship between a woman and her doctor. And then you said that under the statutes, this is already required. So am I to understand that you would disagree with the statute that's currently in effect for informed consent?
The statute refers to having an informed consent with the patient, and I would highly support that. And as I said, every physician has this PAR conference with their patient.
Follow up? But would you agree that women are saying that they have not had this in this particular procedure? So I'm wondering if you support
it. That's what I'm saying, that there's no need for this bill because it already happens. Women already are informed for any procedure, be it abortion or any other procedure.
That's all. Well, I would disagree, having been a counselor and had it said to me many, many times that they had not been informed. I also want to, for the record, state that I did not draft this bill, as Dr. Allen has said, to frighten and coerce women. I want to protect women, and that is my purpose. So that is untrue.
That's good.
Thank you. I do have a question, same question I had before. Do you know of any lawsuits that have occurred because informed consent was not given?
Oh, I think those lawsuits occur all the time. It then behooves the physician to document in their records that they indeed did have a PAR conference with the patient. If the physician can document that, then I think the chances of winning that case are high.
Dr. Higginson?
I'm sorry.
Representative Doyle.
Thank you. Dr. Allen, you put in your testimony that this law or this proposal requires physicians to provide inaccurate medical information. Where is that?
My understanding is that there are some points in this proposed bill that are inaccurate, and I can't give you those right now, but I'm sure other folks from Planned Parenthood, for example, can.
Okay. and follow up. Have you read the bill?
No, I have not read the bill.
Any further questions? Thank you. Dr. Higginson?
Vice Chairman Anderson and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Dr. Grant Higginson. I'm the State Public Health Officer with the Department of Human Services. I appreciate the opportunity to talk to you today and to try to explain to you why the department opposes this bill. First, I do want to say that the department does recognize that there are very serious social, medical, economic consequences that result from unplanned pregnancies. This is an issue that is important to us. At the state level, it's important to the nation as a whole. And for 30 years, we have been committed to, at the department, to providing quality family planning services. I would also want to say that part of providing quality services is to support good patient education and counseling. That's an important public health value for any health care services that are being provided. And so we do not just dismiss this issue of providing good information to patients for pregnancy counseling out of hand. We do at the department, however, oppose this bill for three reasons. The first reason is because we do not think it is good policy to be setting informed consent practices for individual health care issues in statute. That if we're going to be dealing with informed consent, I think it should be a broader discussion. I think it should be discussion that directly involves the health care provider community in those discussions. And again, I don't think that statute's the right place to put that. I think more in policy practices or potentially in rules, but I do not believe that putting that in statute is the right way to go. Another reason why I don't think it's the right way to go is that in some ways it does put us in conflict with the Board of Medical Examiners. The Board of Medical Examiners is the body that is responsible for dealing with inappropriate informed consent issues with physicians, and to put the department right in the middle of that investigation and decision making, I again think puts us at conflict with another state agency, and it's not a good idea. The other issue that I would like to say about informed consent is today we heard some fairly compelling anecdotal testimonies about the inappropriate informed consent process that some women had experienced. And while I'm not saying I doubt that testimony, what we do know is that there have been very few studies done on this issue. One that was conducted by the Kaiser Family Foundation and reported in May of 1999 actually showed that informed consent for abortion procedures was as good, if not better, than informed consent provided for most medical procedures. So the one piece of hard data that we have on how good is informed consent regarding abortion procedures is not saying that it is a problem area. The second reason that we are opposed to the bill is that we're concerned that having these kind of regulations could delay a person getting abortion services at the appropriate time. If as long as an abortion is performed during the first trimester of pregnancy, they are by and large very, very safe procedures. But I think it is very well recognized that the longer you go into a pregnancy, the more complications there are. So to set up a law that by definition delays the time when a person is going to get their abortion by at least a day, and very possibly because of a number of issues much longer than a day, we're concerned may actually increase the risk of this procedure rather than trying to decrease those risks. And then finally, a very pragmatic issue for us, and the third reason we oppose the bill, is that it would impose a significant new workload on the Department of Human Services. We would need to research, prepare, and print education materials. We would need to set up a 24-hour toll line, 24-hour hotline. We would need to have a new website set up for the services. In addition, we would have to create a new data reporting system. We've already looked into whether or not we can add new information to our existing reporting system, and we cannot. And since the bill requires that we have new reporting requirements, it would require a new reporting system for our family planning abortion services database. And then finally, all of this is going to take additional staff resources, and we simply do not have any current program resources that could be diverted, and so we would need additional FTEs in order to provide those new services that are required of us. And so for those three reasons, the department would oppose this bill. Thank you, and I'd be happy to answer questions.
Thank you, Dr. Higginson. Questions, Representative Kloss?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Higginson, Dr. Higginson, excuse me. Were you aware of this bill last session, the almost identical bill that came through the process?
Vice Chair Anderson and Representative Close, yes, I am, and we opposed the bill at that time as well.
Okay, at that time there were several women that testified that they had not had informed consent. Did your agency, Department of Human Services, ever investigate any one of those allegations?
Vice Chair Moses Anderson, Representative Close, no, we did not, and actually that's one of the issues that I raised, is that investigating those issues is something for the Board of Medical Examiners to do. That's a medical practice issue. It should be their responsibility rather than ours. And I guess one question I would ask is were those ever reported to the Board of Medical Examiners? Because some of the testimony I heard today, I think clearly should have been reported to the Board of Medical Examiners so they could have done those investigations. And if there was indeed lack of informed consent, there should have been action on that.
I would just say that since you have heard the allegations, you've heard them twice now, that I would expect that your agency would take some action on this. You're saying that it doesn't happen. We've had testimony that it does. We've had testimony that it doesn't. It seems to me that there's a question there that is your obligation to follow up on. Last question. You talk about the delay with an informed consent law. I would assume that that would apply to any surgery, again, the appendicitis situation. Are you saying that no surgery should be given informed consent because it would delay the time for the surgery?
Vice Chair Moses Anderson, Representative Close. No, what I'm saying is that no other informed consent that I know of, with the exception of Death with Dignity Act, has a delay in the time you give informed consent and the time a procedure is done. If you were to require 24-hour informed consent prior to doing an appendectomy, you would have patients dying on the table. So the delay is an issue that I do think can increase risk, and certainly in appendicitis it could be life-threatening.
Would you agree, though, that in the case of appendicitis, that's still up to the patient, even if it is life-threatening? They make that decision. Is that correct?
Vice Chair Moses Anderson, Representative Close, yes. Whether a person goes to seek care and whether they follow medical advice is a patient's decision, unless they're incapacitated and can't make that decision themselves, or a minor and can't make that decision themselves.
So would you agree that women in this situation of abortion also should be able to make that decision?
Vice Chair Moses Anderson, Representative Close, I strongly believe that women should be making informed consents on any medical procedure that they are having performed upon them, and I believe that applies for abortion as much as it does for any other procedure.
Thank you.
Representative Barnhart.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Doctor, could you provide a copy of the Kaiser study?
Vice Chair Moses Anderson, Representative Barnhart, we'll get that to you.
Thank you.
And I'll get that to the committee administrator, and you can get that to everyone.
Dr. Gallant.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Scott Gallant. I represent the Oregon Medical Association. We have 6,600 members in the state of Oregon. I appreciate the elevation of my title, but I'm actually not a doctor. I do have a tendency to faint at the sight of blood, so you wouldn't want me to be doing any surgical procedures either, for a number of reasons, but thank you anyway. There are a number of issues that the association has concerns about in this legislation. We also testified in opposition to the similar bill introduced last session. Our concerns are the same. One is informed consent, as required in Oregon law, was first addressed by the state Supreme Court in 1971. It was adopted by that policy position as decided by the Supreme Court was adopted in statute in 1977 at the request, request of the Oregon Medical Association. We have had a long-standing position of opposing specific informed consents for any specific medical procedure. We believe that it puts physicians in a position of potentially violating the law and not following the exact specific informed consent for what could be hundreds, if not thousands, of specific informed consents that a legislature today or in the future might decide would be appropriate for specific procedures. So by common law and by statute and by practice, physicians are required to provide informed consent on medical procedures. If they do not, the reason you have informed consent statute on the books, a physician would be committing a battery if they did not receive consent of their patient. So, first of all, this bill, in our opinion, is not necessary. And I do think it creates additional problems, which I'll address in a minute. In defense of the Health Division is not responsible for the disciplinary action that the Board of Medical Examiners may take regarding a physician. It is the Board of Medical Examiners whose statutory duty it is to review complaints, whether it be a violation of informed consent or other allegations from the public or particular patients, in making a determination of whether or not they violated the Medical Practice Act in the state. They take that responsibility very seriously. If you talk to some of our members, believe me, they have a great deal of authority. Physicians may be disciplined, may lose their license, may have their license suspended for violating, by my last count, as many as at least 20 possible reasons for violating the Practice Act, and not providing informed consent would be one of them. I did not hear the earlier testimony regarding adequate informed consent in any particular cases, but I would encourage those who testified earlier to please submit their information to the board. That's the appropriate process, and those allegations will be reviewed to see whether or not they violated the statute. The other issue is that you'll find in the legislation, I believe in Section 8, an actual expansion of the possible tort actions for someone who might have technically violated this proposed change in the law from the patient herself to the spouse, parents, or the spouse and the father's parents for damages for negligence. That typically is not something that the medical association would embrace as a positive direction in statute in today's climate. As many of you may know, we are in what some believe to be the middle of a liability crisis where access to medical care is very endangered. I think most of our members would not view that section very positively. In addition, we have traditionally opposed civil fines and penalties that this bill provides for legal medical procedures, which is also included in this legislation as well, would be objectionable, at least to the medical community. This is a serious issue. The medical community is well aware of it. We all wish, as members of Oregon and as members of society, that individuals make smart adult decisions about the medical care that they receive. Physicians take their responsibilities exceedingly seriously, and there are a multitude of avenues, if there are violations of statute or practice, to address those. But unfortunately, we cannot support this bill as drafted, or any bill that would have a specific informed consent for a specific legal procedure. Thank you.
Questions?
Representative Close.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Gallant, just one question. You said that women should take responsibility for their medical care. Would you agree that minor women from the ages maybe 14 to 18 who are having abortions, it would be difficult then for them to take responsibility because of their age?
Mr. Chair, Representative Close, the Medical Association's policy position about the provision of health care is that it is a decision between the physician and the patient. The state has made a policy decision about when that line is drawn between an adult and one who is a minor, and I have never heard from our members to suggest that that statute should be changed.
Follow up. I don't think you answered my question. I asked you if you thought it would be difficult for a 14 to 18 year old woman without parental involvement to take responsibility for their medical care.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Close, there are a lot of very difficult decisions that have to be made by patients. And I'll give you an example. Someone who has a brain tumor, happens to be a female, has a brain tumor, and is provided a very short list of options. One is to have her brain radiated and having very serious ramifications from that, or not doing it with the possibility of shortening her life, or options of what limited surgical or non-surgical procedures may be available, are very difficult decisions. And adults, human beings, and individuals, unfortunately, find themselves quite often in exceedingly difficult positions. I don't believe that physicians are really in a position to be a social service. They are medical providers who are in a position to provide the best medical advice that they can for their patient. I don't believe that statutes necessarily get you to a position of substituting a judgment for the position of the patient and the physician, and interference with that decision making, which is very sensitive, is very important to the medical community and I think to all citizens of the state.
Madam Chair, I would just say that I would hope that the Oregon Medical Association would see it as their responsibility to protect minor women from what Mr. Gallant has called battery. If it's happening, I would see it as their responsibility to protect them.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to correct the record, if I may. If a physician under Oregon law and statute does not provide informed consent, which has been the law of the land since at least 1971 and actually before that in common law, they would commit a battery. Physicians and the medical association take their role very seriously in trying to help their patients with the best care they can in all circumstances. Thank you.
Thank you, panel. Any further questions?
I have Cappy Eaton or more will be Maura Roach. And Cappy. And Marcia Kelly and Representative Carolyn Tomei, but we'll only have three chairs. We'll
Can I get a time check?
You have 20 minutes. Shall we start with Cappy Eaton?
Thank you, Madam Vice Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Cappy Eaton. I'm the government chair for the League of Women Voters of Oregon, speaking today in opposition to House Bill 2547. The League of Women Voters firmly believes that all women have the right to privacy and choices in all of their reproductive health decisions. We oppose House Bill 2547 for the following reasons. Oregonians have voiced their support for reproductive health choices and opposed any effort to coerce decisions by so-called informed consent at the ballot box. Few, if any, women have not already carefully considered their actions, discussed them with their health care provider before terminating pregnancy. And we've heard some discussion now about the law, which calls for that discussion on informed consent. They should not be harassed by requirements for directed information. No person should be forced to participate in a process regarding their own private health care decision, which is dictated by government action, even though this may be a voluntary act on the part of the woman. In many cases, they would feel coerced to do it. Government resources, in this case the Department of Human Services, should not be used to provide specific information to influence a private citizen about private health care matters, nor to be involved with penalties for intrusion on the patient-physician relationship. And you've already heard from the department about those concerns. Finally, permitting the House Speaker and the Senate President to appoint legislators to intervene in any actions which challenge this measure constitute more government interference in a private citizen's rights. The League urges the Rules Committee to take no action on this bill.
Any questions? Maura?
Chair Doyle, Vice Chair Monis Anderson, members of the committee, my name is Maura Roach, and I'm here today representing the Pro-Choice Coalition of Oregon. There are a few things that I wanted to provide you. One is some submitted written testimony by Dr. Bates that he asked me to bring to the hearing today. Another is about 18 pieces of testimony that were submitted on this similar or same bill last session, and wanted the committee to be aware that there were a great number of folks who've weighed in the past on this issue and would have liked to be here today, but were unable to, given the three-day weekend and the amount of notice. And also, I'll be getting you a section-by-section analysis of the bill by Dr. Mark Nichols, who is the past president of ACOG and testified on this bill last session, and was able to go through the bill and do an analysis. Obviously, we were not able to provide his presence here today to testify on the bill. He had clinic, but we do want to get that information to you since there were a number of questions regarding the specific elements of the bill. The Pro-Choice Coalition of Oregon opposes House Bill 2547 because we do believe it's harmful to women's health and unnecessary misappropriation of current law. Oregon already has informed consent law, and there's no credible evidence that the current law is not working. There are some states that have enacted similar laws, and they have been to detrimental effects. After Mississippi enacted a similar law, the proportion of second trimester procedures increased by 53% among women whose closest provider was in-state. However, for those women whose closest provider was out-of-state and not subject to the law, the proportion of second trimester procedures stayed relatively the same, with a comparatively modest 8% increase. Abortion after the first trimester is far less available than abortion in the first trimester, and therefore women who are delayed end up having fewer options, and women who live rurally tend to have to travel greater distances. In addition to that, these delay periods have been used by anti-choice hardliners in other states to harass women. There have been incidents of clinics being staked out in the parking lots, so forth, writing down license plate numbers of people coming in and out of the parking lots, tracing those back to the owner's home address, and phoning them up and harassing them about their decision to seek services at the clinic. And in Mississippi's case, there was a forced delay law that went into effect, and one member of an anti-choice group made 120 such harassing phone calls. as has been cited, the Kaiser Family Foundation study on the quality of abortion care. I'm just going to pull a couple quotes from that. I know that Dr. Higginson is going to provide the committee with a full copy of that report, but 99% of the respondents said that the explanation of the procedure was clear. 60% rated their overall quality of care as excellent, with another 38% as very good or good. In addition to that, another 96% said they would recommend the doctor to a friend or family member. So while there has been some anecdotal evidence here today that people have not gotten the counseling and the informed consent that they were supposed to have gotten, there is some empirical evidence in terms of a study that's been done that indicates that people overall are satisfied with the service that they got. And in addition to that, I can provide the committee with the patient satisfactory survey numbers from Planned Parenthood itself here in Oregon. Neither the American Psychological Association nor the American Psychiatric Association recognize the so-called phenomenon of post-abortion syndrome or post-abortion trauma, though abortion rights opponents continue to circulate these unfounded claims. And it would be entirely inappropriate for physicians to counsel a patient on a health care claim that is not supported by leading mental health experts in this country, nor am I sure that the standard at which that should be provided would be clear to the physician, and that is required of the physician in this bill on page 3, line 19. So in terms of requiring inaccurate information be given to the client, that would be the location in the bill where that is the case. Additionally, I think the structure of on that same page, line 32, that there's a requirement that the physician convey only accurate scientific information about the unborn child, but not a requirement that the physician provide scientifically accurate information about the woman or her body. And I think that's borne out in another section of this bill that requires some specific counseling provisions. And one of those is on page 2, line 3, which requires that a woman be told that abortion causes breast cancer. The best medical evidence from a large population-based cohort study shows no net effect. Induced abortion places women at increased risk for developing breast cancer. That was a study published by the New England Journal of Medicine. In conclusion, there has been some additional research that shows that the most prominent emotional response to abortion that women have is relief. Up to 98% of the women surveyed have no regrets and would make the same decision again in similar circumstances. I thank you for your time and allowing me to testify before you today. In addition to the materials I mentioned I handed out to you, I have a fiscal here from last session on House Bill 3830. I don't believe there's a fiscal available on this bill that did indicate that in the first biennium of implementation, the cost would be around $200,000 for the department to implement this program. And that is, if you look on the back, without any estimate on what it would cost the Oregon Judicial Department to, in terms of fiscal impact related to all of the lawsuits that are encouraged by the litigation section of the bill.
Marcia? Thank you, Chair Doyle, Vice Chair Mona Sanderson, and members of the committee. My name is Marcia Kelly, and I am on the Public Policy Committee for the American Association of University Women of Oregon, as well as the Salem Branch Public Policy Chair. AUW has approximately 3,000 members in Oregon. Our branches are located in Lake County and Wallowa County in Pendleton Bend. We're not just an I-5 corridor women's organization. In addition, we have 750 members at large of the association who reside in Oregon. We are opposed to House Bill 2547. As others have stated, the law is already in place for informed consent. We are especially concerned about the access to health care services for rural women, and we feel that even a 24-hour wait could create excess costs for women in seeking care. It would also, as Laura just pointed out, increase the cost for the Department of Human Services. House Bill 2547 assumes that women take lightly the termination of a pregnancy. I would submit that the vast majority of women have already done their research, consulted with their spouse or partner, and have made a decision with their primary care physician about what is best for them. Why should a woman be forced to rethink a decision that has already been made? Special interests should not drive personal medical choices. The real solution to House Bill 2547 is providing more extensive education and reproductive and pregnancy prevention in the state of Oregon, and not a 24-hour wait for a decision that has already been made.
Thank you, panel. We have 9 minutes left. I think I would like to bring up Representative Tomei and Representative Nolan.
Thank you, Chair Doyle.
Representative Close has another commitment. She didn't want
to. I just wanted to tell you that I have a town hall in my district and I have to go, but I didn't want you to think that I didn't want to hear your testimony. So
Thank you.
I look forward to seeing your written.
Thanks.
Chair Doyle and Vice Chair Mona Sanderson, members of the committee, thank you for allowing me the opportunity to testify. I'm Mary Nolan. I represent Hess District 36, which is most of Southwest Portland, in the legislature. But I come before you today not so much as a fellow legislator, but rather as a community volunteer and as a mother. As a community volunteer, I have spent many hours as a trained assistant and counselor in health clinics. I have personally listened to many women facing unplanned pregnancies, unwanted pregnancies, and pregnancies that threatened their health and their future fertility. I assisted medical professional staff in assuring that each patient had complete information about her pregnancy and all of her medical options. I watched these professionals offer care, compassion, and time to these patients. And I watched them demonstrate a commitment to give each patient the help she needs to make the best choice for her. I know from this personal experience that this bill is not necessary. You've already heard from plenty of medical professionals who can speak more eloquently and more definitively about, in detail, about the counseling that is already offered. It's already dependably offered to patients seeking an abortion in Oregon. This particular bill does nothing to improve the care that doctors and medical professionals offer to their patients. But the bill is not merely unnecessary. And you've also heard testimony that it creates dangers and risks to patients. And in those instances, I'm particularly mindful of the risk and burden that this bill would impose on women who live in our rural communities, in remote parts of our state, and women who live in a state of poverty within Oregon. The bill would impose an undue and unfair burden on these women. Access to medical care is already shrinking in our smaller communities. Physicians have been forced to refuse new patients in order to provide adequate care for the patients that they've been seeing over the years. Hospitals and clinics have not been able to expand to serve growing populations, and in some cases are closing. they cannot stretch their resources to serve the widespread population in Oregon. And yet, in that backdrop, this bill singles out some patients in our rural areas and makes it even more difficult, even more expensive, and potentially even more dangerous for them to get proper medical care. For those reasons, I urge you to reject this bill and instead dedicate your considerable energies to promoting programs that help women avoid unplanned pregnancy and that truly do make abortions less necessary and not just more dangerous or more expensive. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Nolan. Representative Tomei.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Madam Vice Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Carolyn Tomei, State Representative. I'm speaking to you today not as a state representative, but a mother and grandmother of females, as a social worker who has worked with children and families all of my professional life, as a woman who has worked with girls who became pregnant through incest and rape, women who became pregnant through sexual abuse and rape. I find this bill dangerous and reprehensible. I cannot imagine forcing an 11-year-old girl, a victim of incest, to force her to hear the description and look at the photos of a fetus and listen to the gestational development. I've worked with girls and women who have been abused, who have been sexually abused, who have been raped. I've worked with them as they have gone through abortions. It has not been an easy process to make it more difficult for them who have already gone through extremely difficult times in their lives. To me, it's reprehensible. Also, I'm very concerned. Sometimes I went with a friend whose fetus had died. For a doctor being required, before she did an abortion, requiring her to look at pictures of the fetus and listen to the description of the fetus would have been a great service. So as a mother, grandmother, and social worker, I urge you to vote no on this bill.
Thank you very much. We have a minute and a half. Are there any questions? Thank you, representatives. I will now turn this over to Chair Doyle.
Thank you. And we can finish up the proponents' presentation with Dr. Ken Wilson and Mike Herndon. Come together.
Chair Doyle and members of the committee, my name is Michael Howden. I'm the Executive Director of Stronger Families for Oregon.
Sorry about that. Mispronunciation there, Michael. But,
that's all right.
And just as a reminder, too, we must finish at 3 p.m. So we got another committee coming in right behind us.
Well, 17 years of working with kids, I've been called all kinds of things, so that was all right. I want to reinforce my support for this bill here today. The bill before you really considers one of the most common threads in delivering medicine in America, the concept of patients having full and complete information reflective of our inherent fabric that knowledge is empowering and equipping. Information surrounding medical procedures correlates directly to a patient's dignity and independence. The basic worth of an individual patient compels us to respond to that dignity by sharing information pertinent to the outcomes of a pending medical procedure. This seems especially important given one vital fact that we're all frail and that we all make mistakes. Even among the most genuine and committed, that can be true. In February of 1995, nationally known abortion rights activist Charlotte Taft admitted that some abortion clinics were misleading women. We were hiding some pieces of truth about abortion that were threatening, she said. This article, that is, showed up in the Dallas Morning News, February 9th, 1995. Today's hearing is about a very basic element of health care, and that is the facts and nothing more than the facts. I should also note here that there's been other Planned Parenthood officials over time around the country who've made a similar admission as Ms. Reeves. This bill is a reasonable proposal. It infers that regardless of how one views abortion, it's completely reasonable to hope that a woman has all of the appropriate materials and advice made available to her before she makes that decision, which in a number of ways could remain with her for the rest of her life. An increasing amount of data points to the after effects that women are dealing with. In a British medical journal in 2002, there was a study that found women who had had an abortion were 138% more likely to be at high risk for depression 8 years later than married women who had given birth in a similar time frame. Another study found that women in Southern California who had had an abortion were 63% more likely to need mental health treatment within 90 days compared to their peers from the same experience who had given birth. In the American Journal of Drug and Alcohol Abuse in 2002, a study found that women who had aborted their first pregnancy were 5 times more likely to report frequent subsequent substance abuse than women who had given birth. And then another study in 2002 from the Southern Medical Journal found that women who had aborted had 154% higher risk of death from suicide. One national 5-year study found 25% of women who had abortions sought psychiatric help. Then another national poll found that at least 56% of women have a sense of guilt over their decision. There's other studies that are cited here as well. In view of the evidence of the long-term health effects of abortion, doctors at the University of North Carolina wrote that any woman considering an abortion should be cautioned about the mental health correlates of an increased risk of suicide or self-harm attempts, as well as depression, and a possible increased risk of death from all causes. These medical school physicians said further, failure to provide this information is a direct threat to maternal autonomy, diminishing a woman's ability to give informed consent. These risk factors don't reduce the dignity or worth of any woman. We all share a common frailty that makes us all prone to after effects. It's also common to observe that some after effects are described to patients in the most benign situations possible, such as if a pill will make my stomach upset or if I will get a headache from usage of that prescription. This bill also recognizes that a patient should be able to ask before surgical procedure, given the facts, what's the best and right thing to do. Oregon felt that way when it passed physician-assisted suicide, which does require specific advice for physicians to dispense before the procedure, before the prescription. If I'm not mistaken, I believe near the end of that campaign, the OMA came out in support of that measure, which included specific prescriptions for, prescribed advice beforehand for consent. Polls also show a great deal of support for this in principle. Some argue that this type of legislation will inhibit a woman's right to choose. However, the reality is that this will not stop any woman from getting an abortion. This legislation simply ensures that the physician participates in the decision-making process. How can assurances of knowledge be an interference? This bill actually assures that the information is not open to bias from an industry that might be interested in promoting its future. The conflict between what hundreds of women say they receive and what clinics say they give out has long been documented in various parts of the country. Today's examples show that very well. Similar legislation has become upheld by the courts in other states. And in 1989, the state of Pennsylvania passed the Women's Health Protection Act. And of course, you've heard Casey cited here today. I would reinforce for you that the Supreme Court in that case did not share the cautions that others who are against this kind of legislation verbalize. They see that as a legitimate risk. They don't see that as an interference in the patient-doctor relationship, given the dramatic nature of a lot of the research that they observed and examined up against constitutional law. They saw it as a very valid operation. Some will argue that the 24-hour waiting period causes undue delay and additional expense. When one is weighing that consideration against the possible long-term ramifications of abortion, the balance clearly is tipped in favor of such informed consent. In addition, society regularly recognizes the needs and benefits of deferring certain functions in favor of safety or other considerations. outside of the abortion context, informed consent requirements are common and non-controversial. Abortion is the only medical procedure where the normal requirement for informed consent prior to undergoing the medical procedure seems to be in such strong question. One OBGYN has said, I never perform a surgical procedure other than most minor skin lesion removals without a reflection period to help the patient decide whether medical or surgical choices are appropriate. I would offer simply a case such as a vasectomy where waiting periods are enacted, and there are other procedures like them as well. In Casey, the court upheld a reflection period, saying that the idea that important decisions will be more informed and deliberate if they follow some period of reflection does not strike us as unreasonable, particularly where the statute directs that important information become part of the background of the decision. I would also submit to you from personal experience, where I grew up in a single-parent home. My mom raised five children by herself, and in all of our situations of receiving medical care, I can't think of one where the question of safety or the importance of information was ever sacrificed for the real demands, which are very real, of scheduling and other burdens that are on a household in that situation. On the other hand, it does not interfere with the doctor's right. The joint opinion in Planned Parenthood versus Casey concluded that it was constitutional for a state to regulate physician speech as a part of its regulation of the practice of medicine. All medical procedures involve a potential risk to the patient who undergoes them. And as a matter of routine, any medical choice should include knowledge based on those facts. And I believe Dr. Wilson today is going to be able to show you a dramatic increase in those complications according to Oregon's own records. All women who have the right to choose also have the right to know what the ramifications of their choice may be. The state of Oregon would only be ensuring that this decision would be made and the facts given to the patient against a backdrop that perhaps shows us that this may not be occurring in every case, certainly in many cases. The access to accurate, relevant, and critical information doesn't make a woman weaker. It only strengthens her knowledge base for a more informed choice. It has nothing to do with clinic demonstrations or harassment. It has everything to do with accurate information. We applaud this committee for considering this bill, as you consider any number of medical-related bills for the practice of safe medicine in Oregon, and encourage you to support it. Thank you for your patience.
Thank you. Dr. Wilson.
Thank you. My name is Dr. Ken Wilson. Thank you, Chair Doyle. I graduated from medical school at the University of Texas in 1981, pursued another 8 years of postgraduate training, and then taught on the faculty of OHSU Medical School for 7 years. I'm a practicing surgeon and sit on the board of a local outpatient surgery center. I'm familiar with the state of Oregon's legal requirements regarding physicians and their patients. And like all physicians, I deal with issues of risk management and preparing patients for an informed decision. And I support House Bill 2547 for 5 reasons. Number one, this bill empowers women. Women need medical facts in order to make an informed choice. Hiding facts from women is paternalistic and patronizing. Unless a woman is thoroughly informed, it's not really a choice. Two, Oregon law requires it. Physicians are required to fully inform every patient of the alternatives, risks, and complications of even the most minor medical procedure. Every hospital and outpatient clinic in Oregon requires this signed informed consent be on the chart prior to treating the patient. But currently, there are no state requirements for abortionists to provide this critical information. Last month, a young girl in the Portland area was given Valium prior to signing her consent form for an abortion. Her signature was so wobbly it could hardly be read. That does not count as informed consent, and you will be hearing from this young lady later. Three, the U.S. Supreme Court supports it. You've already heard this in Pennsylvania versus Casey in 1992. Justice Sandra Day O'Connor read the majority opinion. It upholds informed consent exactly like House Bill 2547, providing literature on fetal development, a 24-hour waiting period, and adoption and financial aid information, as has already been quoted to you. So the U.S. Supreme Court has upheld and supported informed consent laws like HB 2547 for women. As well, 15 other states are ahead of Oregon in protecting women. Four, Abortion has serious complications and consequences which abortionists are not adequately telling women. Dr. Grant Higginson from the State Health Department, from whom you heard earlier today, admitted in these chambers 4 years ago that Oregon did not have adequate data on abortion complications because it's not being adequately reported. These complications include death. Women have died as a result of abortions, and doctors have even been charged with murder for lack of care of the women after an abortion. In 1977, the U.S. government Center for Disease Control reported that 7 times more women had already died from legal abortions than illegal abortions prior to 1973. Standard medical textbooks list these commonly accepted abortion risks: infection, including severe life-threatening peritonitis, perforation of the uterus, severe blood loss requiring transfusion or resulting in death, and increased risk of problems in subsequent pregnancies. These include miscarriage of a later wanted child, that increases by 200%, lethal tubal pregnancies up 500%, infertility increases 400%, and there's a 252% increased risk of death over childbirth, according to the Finland study and a study performed last year in California. Personally, I would want my wife or girlfriend to know these medical facts, and yet they're not being adequately told to women. And the Oregon statistics show that in 1997, before the enactment of the reporting, there were only 30 reported risks. In 1998 through 2001, it skyrocketed after the reporting began. I would like to mention breast cancer in relation to abortion. There's been reports here that there is no correlation. I'd like to point out that 10 years after abortion was legalized, American women experienced a sudden 400% increase in breast cancer, according to the American Cancer Society. The Journal of the American Cancer Institute in 1994 showed a 50% increase in breast cancer after abortion. The 1996 meta-analysis paper by Dr. Brand et al. Reviewed 61 studies worldwide, clearly demonstrating an increased risk. So much so that the U.S. government's Center for Disease Control recently removed their website claiming there was no link. Goodness, even U.S. government policies moving at a snail pace have finally changed. Psychological trauma, depression, suicide, you've heard. The Finland Stake study showed that there's a 4 times greater death rate for abortion mothers versus live births within 1 year. Many of these were suicides. Great Britain had a similar report. The University of Minnesota here in America reported a 10-time increase attempted suicide for teenagers after abortion. 56% of the world's female suicides occur in China, where they force abortion. The Southern Medical Journal in 2002 reported a 154% higher risk of death from suicide, an 82% higher risk of death from accidents, and a 44% higher risk of death from natural causes. And I believe the testimonies of the brave women from whom you've heard today verify the sober reality of these sterile medical facts. It's interesting that we've only heard from a doctor and administrators opposing. We've not heard from a woman who's had an abortion saying she was fully informed and understood all the aspects of this procedure. So why do we allow this one medical procedure an exemption from informing women? If we say that the minor abortion procedure need not be given complete informed consent, what other procedures should be logically exempt? I would suggest every outpatient medical operation should be exempted from Oregon law if we exempt abortion. Laws protect patients, and women deserve this protection also. That is why a More Information poll in 2001 showed 79% of Oregonians favored requiring doctors to provide women information on fetal development, risk of abortion, and alternatives to abortion 24 hours prior to the procedure. That's 79% of Oregonians. We've heard opposing testimony today that the bill is, quote, unnecessary, undermining, detrimental. It means to scare and intimidate. It interferes with the doctor-patient relationship. There's biased counseling. It's reprehensible in rape and incest. And what Dr. Richard Allen calls providing inaccurate information, although he's not read the bill. I would point out that the U.S. Supreme Court has already disagreed with all of these objections and overruled them. And 15 other states have found the clinical guidelines in the law currently inadequate to protect women. That's why they've passed these informed consent laws. But also like to point out that the Kaiser study suffers from a skewed population base and provider bias because there were no controls outside that Kaiser system. Three, as a member of the OMA, I must say that the leadership appears somewhat schizophrenic in supporting mandated waiting period and consent laws for physician-assisted suicide while saying they oppose in principle the current legislation.
Dr. Wilson, if I can get to the take that 2 minutes to wrap up, and I know we have at least one question.
Okay, great. So I support this for five reasons. It empowers women to be informed for their own safety. Oregon law requires it. Abortions have serious complications and consequences that are not being told women. The U.S. Supreme Court supports these informed consent bills, and the vast majority of Oregonians support them. Why? It's because women deserve to know the facts before risking their lives. Unless women are informed, it's not a choice, and it's not safe. Let's give them an informed choice.
Thank you. Representative Barnhart?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's Mr. Howden?
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes, Representative.
Could you describe your medical training and background?
I have no medical training. Mr. Chair, Representative Barnhart, I have no medical training.
Okay. Thank you. And one more question, if I may.
Follow up,
Mr. Chair. Thank you. And it's, I'm sorry, I missed the other... The doctor's name?
Ken Wilson.
Dr. Wilson, would you tell us what your area of practice is and area of specialization, if you have one?
Yes. Do you ask that to ask my qualifications or more as a pejorative comment?
I'm sorry, I'm asking for information.
Okay. Well, as I mentioned, I graduated from the University of Texas in 1981. I was on the faculty of Oregon Health Sciences University Medical School. I've been trained in general surgery, where I provided women care with hysterectomies, took care of women with dying of ovarian cancer, and provided breast cancer care for women, including having to do mastectomies and counsel these women on the effects of their mastectomies. So I had considerable experience in these areas over my about 25 years of training.
Thank you. May I follow, Mr.
Chair?
Sure. Thank you. And what is your what area? What are the areas in which you practice now?
I'm a board certified orthopedic surgeon.
And again, if I may, what does that mean in terms of the areas that, in which you practice?
I'm not sure.
Would you translate for the rest of us what you mean when you say orthopedic physician?
Orthopedic physician takes care of bones, joints, muscles, tendons, nerves, skin, multiple areas like that.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Anything further? Yes,
Representative Berger. One quick question.
Yes, as long as it's going to result in a quick answer.
All right. It is going to be a quick answer. Director Howden, is this packet from your research group that I received?
Yes, Representative Doyle, Representative Berger, yes, that is from my testimony. It includes some of the studies, a few of the studies that were cited, as well as a chart summarizing the data from the complications reported from the Oregon Vital Statistics.
One of the studies says that most women who get abortions are between the age of 18 and 24. Would you agree with that?
Nationally, that would be correct in terms of trends.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
Thank you, gentlemen, and I also wish to thank both the proponents and opponents for this hearing today. I thought that it was done in a professional manner. I thought that it was good information, very good presentations on both sides. And with that, our committee hearing is adjourned.
Mm-hmm.